Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there. And, of course, the big topic this week, folks, is the releases that the WWE did in regard especially to the main roster. We did cover some of this on Friday's show. But for the benefit of some people who didn't hear Friday's show, we will talk a little bit more in depth about it. And, unfortunately, the rumor mill is that there may be more coming. Now, this has not been confirmed by any stretch of the imagination, but there was an oddly worded statement saying stuff about the current and future releases. And when you say future releases, that would indicate that it's a probability that there are more people that could be released. So we're going to keep our eyes open. Tomorrow would probably be the day if that is going to happen. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. We're going to talk a little bit about the move from Fox to back to USA for SmackDown and what that could mean for the WWE. And we've got some more information on the Jon Moxley incident from AEW. So let's dive right into it, and let's start with that. On Friday's show, I really took to task a little bit the AWA as a promotion, because I said, you cannot have this. You cannot have a promotion where a referee is afraid to count the three count, thinking he's going to be or she's going to be in trouble if it's not the correct outcome, when the wrestler clearly can't get their shoulder off the mat because they're hurt. So now new word has come out that it was Jon Moxley was furious with the referee for exactly that reason. Jon Moxley understood he was hurt and wanted the referee to just count him down, and he did not do it. So Moxley then made the audible to say, do it again to Rey Fénix, which is a huge mistake on his part. And then Rey Fénix, once again, makes a huge blunder, does not do the move correctly at all, and then, to add insult to injury, torques back on Moxley's neck as hard as he can for the pin. So a world of things went wrong there, folks, but the catalyst for all of this, the one that you need to remember, is none of these things, none of them would have occurred if the referee or Rey Fénix himself was able to spot the fact that Jon Moxley was concussed before the match even started with that dive to the outside of the ring. Now, clearly the announcers were saying he looks like he's out of it. Why did someone not send word to the referee? Check Moxley. He doesn't look like he's selling. He looks like he's concussed. This is what I mean when I say the professionalism of the company. Within seconds, the referee in WWE would have been down there asking Moxley, are you okay? And Moxley would have said, I don't think so. Now, they say he was asked if he could continue, and he said, I think I can. But when you say you think you can, that is an automatic no, you cannot. Because the strongest you're ever going to get from a professional wrestler is, I think I can. You're never going to get, no. Especially from a guy like Moxley. So if you say, I think so, well, then the answer is no. And besides that, asking him and telling him is two different things. You're the guy looking at him. You're the guy looking at him. You have to be able to make that call as a referee. You have to understand that that's your first obligation, is the safety of the workers. And if you can't make that call, If you can't distinguish a concussed person from somebody who's selling, certainly someone at ringside or someone backstage has to be there. You're wearing an earpiece to say, call this. Call this now. He's obviously hurt. No one did that. So none of this would have happened. Ray Phoenix doing a lousy split-legged pile driver twice wouldn't have happened. The referee having to make a stop right in the middle of a 2 9/10 count would not have happened. John Moxley in a concussed state calling a really poor audible would not have happened. None of that would have happened had you very simply spotted the problem right from the outset. Matter of fact, you could have called an audible and had Ray Phoenix do something to the outside of the ring again and tell Moxley stay outside at the count out. You'd have had a rematch in a little matter of a couple of weeks maybe or whatever it happens to be. And you wouldn't have had to have the title switch hands. Now, I just recently heard that Gail Kim over in WCW, in Impact Wrestling rather, I'm sorry, in Impact Wrestling, had a concussion. Got a concussion in a recent match. And she instantaneously, just because she felt a few symptoms, decided, I'm going to the hospital, where they diagnosed her as having the concussion. She is now taking a series, and it wasn't even a serious concussion, but she's now taking a series of treatments in these oxygen chambers. And she said, it almost immediately relieved some of my symptoms, and I got 2 or 3 more sessions to go. She had the doctor on with her, and the doctor was saying why this is important. He's saying the science behind why this helps alleviate the not only the symptoms, but any potential other issues. And I say to myself, why was John Moxley not driven directly to that hospital, regardless of what he had to say? There's this cavalier attitude back there that's just like, oh, he's okay. He said he's okay. He's a grown man. I'm not going to force him. Yeah, he's also a grown man that is under contract to you. And you tell him, you not only am I you getting in that ambulance, I'm going with you. That's what you do. So all of this could have been avoided if everyone had just done their job to begin with and recognized that the very first thing before the match started, the dive to the outside of the ring, concussed John Moxley, and the match should never have taken place from there. The fact that it did, well, it reminds me of old school WWE. You know, Kurt Angle tells stories about being so concussed he couldn't remember being in the match. He was in a triple threat match with Triple H, The Rock, and himself, and Triple H was supposed to take him out with a big table spot, and they were going to haul him back to the dressing room, and then he was going to come charging back out later. Well, he said, I was really concussed. He really did knock me out with the table spot. The table collapsed too quickly. I hit my head on concrete. I was concussed. They were saying, get him smelling salts. Get him smelling salts and get him back out there. And he said, and I ran back out there, and I couldn't remember anything. They literally had to walk me through that match like I joined it cold. I didn't remember when I'm supposed to duck. I didn't remember when I'm supposed to do something. They had to call it completely. You know, you can do that. But nowadays, that would never have happened. Nowadays, there's no way I would have gotten back in that ring. They never would have allowed me to do it. So what he's basically saying is that ECW is back 20 years ago when it comes to the way they treat their wrestlers. Now, I thought this was the company who said we are going to be treating our wrestlers so much better than the WWE. I thought this was a company who said, you know, it's all about the wrestlers and their well-being and their financial and their medical and everything else. Well, that's not true. Because what you've just heard is what would have happened in the WWE 20 years ago, not today. And it's happening today in AEW. So I remember very distinctly when Tony Khan, it wasn't even Tony Khan, it was Cody Rhodes and people were saying, there's going to be equal pay. And I said, I call bullshit. You're not going to be given some woman's wrestler who's on the show once a week the same money as the Young Bucks are getting. That's bullshit. And there's going to be full medical and everyone's going to be, I called bullshit right from the beginning. I told you, this isn't going to fly. It's not going to work. They're never going to be able to do it. It sounds good. It's not going to work. Well, what do we see? There's no equal pay thing. That's crazy. As far as the medical is concerned, they're not even overly concerned about a man who clearly was concussed and could potentially have had neck injuries after two botched leg pile drivers. So you're going to ask a concussed man. Remember, Kurt Angle said, I couldn't remember even any of the match. When am I supposed to duck? What am I supposed to do here? Couldn't remember any of it. So you're going to ask a concussed man, you okay? And you're going to accept his word. That kind of stuff, Mike, that's 20 years ago. And, you know, AEW is supposed to be the quote-unquote modern face of wrestling. I hardly think so.
I don't really think so either. Here's furthermore, look, you know, I like to state the referees in the WWE are better right now than, I mean, even the officials in Impact are better than what these guys have no experience or very little experience. They call them senior referees. I mean, Charles Robinson, who's been at this thing forever now, Chad Patton is another one in the WWE. Chad Patton was around 20, may have been around 20 years ago, but he still had Brian Hebner, and he still had the Hebners around and all these people around him at that point, right? They were the senior referees. So when you don't have that type of leadership in that locker room as a referee, this is what you get. This is inexperience as a referee to know when something like this has happened. Now, I'm not absolving the wrestlers. Moxley should have known better, but I agree with Moxley. He should be pissed off at this referee. Not just what's his name, but he should be pissed off at his referee, you know. Because
he clearly wasn't going to kick out. Moxley clearly wasn't going to kick out. He knew. He was smart enough to know, I'm just going to lose the belt and that's it. When the referee doesn't count the three count, it's hard to do. Now, I would love to have an interview with this referee where he's asked a simple question. Was this, in fact, your mistake? Were you never taught that if the wrestler doesn't get his shoulder up, then you count the three count? Were you never told that? The answer is no, I never was told that when I was training to be a referee or when I got here, I was never told that. Okay, well, then that's somebody else's fault then, and they should have made very clear when they got to AEW what their rules were. You're the referee. You need to check this. You're the referee. You need to control this. You're the referee. If you see a wrestler's clearly hurt, you can call the match. You're the referee. If they don't get their shoulder up by the three count, count it anyway. You're not in any trouble. These are the things that need to be expressed to the referees when they are hired. If they don't know it, then I imagine the referee saying, all right, I know Moxley's supposed to win. How can I count the three count? I can't. I'll be in trouble. I'll lose my job. Everybody will be mad at me. Because it's not clearly defined what you're supposed to do. So if he was never told that, either in his training or by this company, then it's really not his fault. But if he was, then it is. Now, if he's not, this is Tony Khan and company's fault. How do you hire a referee and don't give him clearly give him the instructions on what is expected of him, what his duties are, what he can and cannot do, what he can and cannot control? How come you can't do that? Because you're too busy dancing on a platform trying to get yourself over? Now let me tell you something else that's bothering me. It's been bothering me for a little while about Tony Khan, and I didn't say anything because I understand he's a small guy. I understand he's not a fighter. And I understand that the majority of these wrestlers, if not every single one of them, could probably rip his head off in a heartbeat. But when Tony Khan says, I feared for my life backstage with CM Punk, then what you're saying is CM Punk threatened to kill me. Or CM Punk was so violent that his rage could have accidentally killed me. I think that's an over-exaggeration. Now, I'm all for firing Punk. Best move you ever did. But let's not over-exaggerate. If you were in a position, you're the boss. If you're in a position where your wrestlers do not respect you enough to literally say, I don't care how mad I am, I wouldn't lay a finger on my boss. That's really going too far. Then you don't have their respect, Tony. You don't have their respect. All you have is their gratitude for, hey, he's signing me a big fat paycheck, stupid Mark. Because if they really respected you, you could have walked in there, I don't care how heated that fight was, and say, hey, end it. And both guys would have said, okay, fine, fine, because we respect you. Right? How many times have we heard in the WWE that one of the locker room leaders, whether it be the Undertaker back in the day or whoever it was, would literally say, all right, knock it off, and it was knocked off instantaneously because they respected him as a leader. What do you think would have happened if it was Vince? That would have been even more respect there. They were, oh, definitely can't do it in front of Vince. These guys don't care. Tony Khan does not have the respect of his workers. Now, the guys that he's on the side of, like the Young Bucks and stuff, they may be patting him on the shoulder saying, he's our buddy, he's not in, but they don't respect you. Because if the Young Bucks respected you, they never would have knocked on CM Punk's door to begin with anyway, came to you and said, hey, Tony, are you going to handle this? Because if you're not going to handle it, then we are going to knock it on his door. Because he's basically called us out, Tony. Did they do that? No, they didn't do that, because they also do not respect Tony Khan. I don't think Tony Khan has the respect of a great deal of his workers, and that's a major problem, Todd.
You're absolutely right there, like you said. The difference between the WWE locker room and the AEW locker room, the WWE locker room has more respectable people as leaders. And when you see more control of that than AEW mostly. When now, recently before, Randy Orton was sort of like a locker room leader before he got injured.
Yeah, to some degree. See, this is the thing. There has to be some sort of a respect factor with your boss. You don't have to like your boss. A lot of people don't like their boss. But there is a respect factor. And if you don't have that respect factor, I'm telling you, I don't know. I think you need to rethink the way you're running your business. Anyway, John Moxley apparently is okay. They said it was a mild concussion, which, listen, you watched it yourself. I just, maybe an hour ago, watched Dutch Mantel watching it, and Dutch Mantel said, I don't know how he's not severely injured. I don't know how the hell he's walking. And that's an old school dude telling you that. So, this is my point. You dodged a bullet. It's great that he has a mild concussion and he'll be fine. That's fantastic news. You couldn't ask for better. But this could have ended way, way, way worse than this. This could have ended in absolute tragedy. And I just want you to think about something. God, thank God it didn't happen. What happens if John Moxley broke his neck in that ring and was paralyzed? What happens if John Moxley literally broke his neck and it killed him? What about AEW then? Now I know, because I had some people write me and say, well, it happens in WWE. Look what Ridge Holland did to Big E. Yes. Accidents do happen. This is not about an accident, folks. This is what I'm trying to explain. It's not about accidents, because accidents happen in pro wrestling. Ridge Holland screwed up that suplex and he dropped Big E on his head. Instantaneously, everybody knew it. Maybe Big E didn't. Big E knew he hurt his neck. I guarantee you, if Ridge Holland had to come over to Big E and said, "You okay? Can we do that again?" Big E would have said, "Okay," because he wasn't in his right mind. It was everyone around him who said, "It's over." AEW doesn't seem to have that. So, yes, the first the jump on the outside of the ring that concussed him, absolutely an accident. Ray Phoenix didn't purposely concuss John Moxley, and it's equal fault. Moxley knows he's coming over the top rope. He just, you know, it was one of these things. He hit him too hard. Moxley didn't move quick enough, whatever it happened to be. Equal blame, boom, but you are concussed. And now that you are concussed, the next logical step is you end the match. And when you don't end it, and you see clearly that on top of the fact that the guy's concussed, his head clearly hit the mat with the first split leg pile driver, you count him down. That's it. You tell him as you're counting, "Stay down, John." That's it. A lot of things went wrong here. It's not about the accident. It's not about the initial oops. Wrestling's a tough business. You're going to get hurt. It's about what happens after you're hurt. And what happened after John Moxley was hurt is unforgivable and it's dangerous. And steps need to be taken to make sure this never, ever, ever happens again. Now, on a related note, John Moxley said he has arthritis equal to a 70-year-old man. If that arthritis had ever set into his neck, probably might now, but then you're talking about a very unhappy future life. So if AEW is supposed to be looking out for the boys the way Vince McMahon never did, making sure that the boys are taken care of like Vince McMahon never did, you're not doing a very good job. Because I promise you, had that match occurred in a WWE ring, it never would have started. And if it did start, within seconds, the referee would have recognized this is not what good, and he would have called an audible, and they would have ended that match. Guaranteed. Because that concussion was visible. If I could see it on a television screen, you mean to tell me people there live couldn't see it? Ray Phoenix couldn't look in the eyes of John Moxley? He's working with him and say, "Oh, yeah, he's concussed. He's not acting right." And tell the referee? Referee couldn't see it? That's hard for me to believe. Very hard for me to believe. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the releases, because the one that everyone seems to be the most, I wouldn't say shocked, but the most up in arms about is Matt Riddle. And I want people to understand something. From the very beginning, when Matt Riddle signed and said, "Well, I want it in my contract that I can use marijuana, because if I can't use marijuana, I'm not signing," I said, don't sign him. If smoking a joint is more important than your professional career, then don't sign him. I realize there's tons and tons of people who smoke a joint and they go to work and they're not under the influence when they're at work, and that's fine and whatever. But there's not tons and tons of people making a huge living as a professional wrestler. That is a very select group of people. And if you don't take it seriously enough as one of those very select group of people to say, "Fine, I'll knock it off," then how bad do you want it? Then the minute he gets into the Federation, he tries to start his own fight with Brock Lesnar, which was not a good idea at all. Matt Riddle can run around saying, "I'm a legit MMA badass," all he wants to. He's not Brock Lesnar MMA badass. Okay? He's not that. So if you want to start shit like that, that's not going to end well. Pisses off people like Seth Rollins. He has that ridiculous thing with the with the former wrestler, female wrestler, in which she says he sexually assaulted her in some way, shape, or form by forcing her to give him oral sex in a car, which I don't believe, and I never did believe, because everyone said she was carrying on an affair with him, and I gave him the benefit of the doubt. But still, he's carrying on an affair. He's trying to get some girl to give him a blowjob in a car where there are men in the back actually sitting. We have a problem. We have a problem with his behavior. He then gets into a drug rehab. It's found out that he's doing way more than marijuana. Surprise, surprise. Then he has the incident where he's supposedly drunk and disorderly on the plane. He accuses an officer at the airport of sexually assaulting him. This is too much. Now, supposedly, Mansoor and Mace are saying there was an incident backstage where Gunther actually slapped, Riddle actually slapped Gunther for something that he did to him in a match. You can't have this. You can't have this. For all the fact that he was very talented playing his Sean Penn and Fast Times and Ridgemont High type character, for all the fact that he had the charisma and whatever and was a good athlete, you cannot have this. And the WWE does not want it, and the WWE will not put up with it. And surprised he didn't get cut in the first round. Technically, he did, but he was the last one. I figured he'd be the first name on the list. You can't give people endless chances. At some point, when you say, look, half the locker room doesn't like him, he's putting undue negative publicity on the Federation by accusing people of this, that, and the other thing, having girls accuse him of certain things. He's backstage trying to write his own angles. He's in and out of drug rehab. He's cavorting with porn stars who are spreading stuff about him online, making us look bad. At what point, Mike, do you say, we just can't have this, and you cut him loose?
Think about this. Seth Rollins' ex-girlfriend, I can't remember her name. At one point, she was with the WWE, and then she gets caught with some sort of Nazi flag or something in the background of a Twitter video or something, and they, right off the bat, let her go, right? So,
yep.
And this guy keeps getting chance after chance after chance. They finally decide to cut bait with him. Oh, and by the way, Marcus, think about it this way. Throw out with Tony Khan, throw out the McMahons, because we know what the McMahons are, right? Let's look at a guy that's just about the same as him, kind of a money mark, but has more control of his federation, and that's Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Never would have happened under Billy Corgan either.
No,
that's my point. Because Billy Corgan, unlike Tony Khan, and this comes straight from a few of the wrestlers' mouths, say he's friendly to us. He's not he's not a jerk. He's not saying don't ever talk to me and I'm the boss. He's friendly, but he's not friends with us. He understands there's a line between you guys are working for me and I can be friendly, and you guys are working for me and I want to hang out with you and be buddies. He doesn't do that. That, I think, is good advice. That, I think, is really good advice. I think that Tony Khan, somewhere in his world, thinks that if I'm buddies with all these guys, they'll work really hard for me, and they'll understand that I appreciate them, and I'm treating them like I would a friend, and I understand his philosophy. But at the end of the day, also, if you are friends with them, then, if your buddy is working for you, he knows he can get away with a little bit because you're a friend of his, and you're going to say, I overlooked that. You can't. Not in this business, you just can't. You just can't. Say what you want about Vince McMahon, and at times he's been very cutthroat, but he clearly understands business is business. I'm not sure Tony Khan does. I think Billy Corrigan does, too. This is an unfortunate incident that turned out to be better than it could have been. So they got lucky. They dodged a bullet. But dodging a bullet does not mean I got away with it, so nothing needs to change. Yeah, you got away with it. Now something really does need to change so this never happens again, because you may not dodge that second bullet. Anyway, Riddle being gone, Todd, to me, signifies, I think this sends a message to the back. Riddle was very popular. Riddle sold a bunch of merchandise. Riddle was a guy who wasn't well-liked backstage, but certainly with Randy Orton coming back, they could have had a great big giant storyline about the RK-Bro and everything else. They had their ducks in a row. So for them to let Riddle go, you know that they had to figure none of this is worth his behavior.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said with Matt Riddle, he was pulling like a CM Punk backstage, not well-liked, not getting along with other superstars. The behavior and everything, the fights with the other superstars, it's just like a CM Punk clone.
Well, it's even worse than CM Punk, because at least CM Punk wasn't drunk and disorderly or in and out of drug rehab. CM Punk might have been, you know, hard to deal with backstage and want everything his way, but, I mean, you can't have a guy popping in and out of drug rehab, slapping people backstage, trying to work his own angles, insulting wrestlers, putting negative light on the WWE, which is exactly what he's doing. I mean, what do you think happens when you're dating porn stars and the porn stars are like, we've done every kind of drug imaginable with Matt Riddle? How does that make WWE look? Not very good. And it's still to this minute it doesn't look good, because one of his ex-girlfriends now tweets, I'm so happy he got fired because this vindicates me that he's really the person I said he was all along, and the only thing that empowered him to keep acting like this was the fact that he was famous, and now that he doesn't have that job anymore, maybe he'll straighten up and look at himself the way he needs to look at himself. Then another, I think his current girlfriend, chimes in and says, well, he wasn't even like this until, yeah, he was a liar, and yeah, he was this, and he was that, and a womanizer, and a druggie, but he got way worse when he was with you, sweetie, and you shouldn't be celebrating anybody's firing. And here we go with more drama. The guy is a drama magnet. You don't need it. You don't need it. People are saying, maybe he'll go to AEW. Gee, that's just what they need. Yes, rub your palms together and pray he goes to AEW, where bullshit can really get deep again. Folks, I'm not trying to say that everyone needs to be an angel. I'm no angel. I doubt anybody on this panel is an angel or anybody listening is an angel. What I am saying is this. There is a small handful of people on this earth who make a huge living. I'm not talking about part-timers who work at Walmart and then they go on weekends and wrestle independent shows. I'm not talking about those people. There are a very finite amount of people who make a huge, comfortable living being a professional wrestler. There's really not many at all. Comparatively. So it's an honor to be one. And if you're willing to sacrifice nothing for it, if you're not even willing to straighten up and fly right for it, why should you have the right? Because you're talented, big deal. There are other people who will straighten up and fly right who are just as talented. So why should you be given chance after chance after chance? What makes you the guy who says, I can get away with everything and nobody will do anything to me, as opposed to the guy who says, you know, I'm going to try to straighten up and fly right and stay above the scandals and all that kind of stuff, because I know it reflects bad on the company who's signing my paycheck. And the same people who are crying Matt Riddle was fired, and it's really not fair. He just wanted to smoke some dope and have fun and party and do this and do that. Are the same people who were gleeful when the dude from the Sons of Anarchy was fired because he said Trump was a good president. I want you to think about that for a minute. So it's perfectly okay to fire that guy. Jackson Riker's got to go. He's a Republican. However, Matt Riddle, who has been in and out of drug rehab, has had sexual assault allegations filed on him, not once but twice, filed a sexual assault allegation against an official at an airport, cavorting with porn stars, and who says he's doing every kind of drug imaginable, slaps a wrestler back in Seth Rollins' face over whatever, pisses off Brock Lesnar, and half the locker room doesn't even like Riddle, and we're supposed to say, well, that's perfectly okay. That's a terribly unjust firing. Doesn't make much sense, Mike.
Doesn't make much sense. Let me give you another example of what happened. Remember Enzo and what happened with him? And they almost fired, they let it go, but they almost fired him right away, right, Enzo? They let it go and then whatever, and then they ended up firing him anyway. But, again, Enzo Enzo didn't get but one chance, and then they fired him after, you know, they fired him. So yeah, I mean, if a guy like Enzo who was absolutely making them a lot of money, making the WWE a lot of money, because he can get himself over. There are very few people that can get themselves over like Enzo did, right? And they still fired him. So if you're going to do that to Enzo, then why give a guy like this guy, you know, this many chances? And the difference between him and Punk is the whole straight edge thing that he used to do, that's who Punk is. He may have a bad attitude and all that stuff. But there's nowhere that I've heard that he actually does any kind of drugs or drinks or whatever or this, that, and the other. And like, there's nowhere where he had it in his contract that he could smoke weed, you know?
No, he hasn't done anything illegal. Let's put it that way. Has there been any sexual assault allegations against CM Punk? No. Has he been in and out of drug rehab for illegal narcotics? No. He is a drama magnet. There's no question about that, but not when it comes to legalities of things. There's too many legal things here. First, it's, oh, well, I got a sexual assault charge filed on me. Then it's, well, I got to go to drug rehab. Then it's, well, I'm filing a sexual assault charge on somebody. Enough already. Enough. Straighten your life out. That's the most important thing. Could Matt Riddle come back? Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, there are some people, I'm not mentioning any real names, but there are some people who work around the WWE who say it's a very, very strong possibility that this is just a wake-up call message, and that one or maybe more than one of the people that were released this week are going to end up back after the first of the year. Now, they didn't mention any names, but I would tell you that Matt Riddle is probably strong among them, because if he can get his life in order, they might be willing to give him another chance based upon the fact that he certainly was someone who was popular with the fans, sold some merchandise, and was okay in the ring. So it's very possible. It's very possible. As far as the others, well, you know, I'm speculating that maybe one of them could potentially be Elias. Maybe they just don't have nothing for him now. They don't want him on the payroll. If they come up with something, maybe they will, or tell him to go out in the indies and make a little bit of a name for yourself, and then we'll think about it. That's a possibility. I don't think Shelton Benjamin and I don't think Dolph Ziggler, as much as I'd like to see them both back, I don't think either one, and most of that has to do with their age. Benjamin's got to be into his 40s. Certainly Ziggler is too. And I think they just felt, you know, it's not like we're going to give him a major run. So both of these guys, in my opinion, should have been WWE lifers. I think it sends a really bad message to fire either one of them. But they did, and I don't think they'll hire them back. I'll be surprised if either one of them get hired back. Now, as far as the rumor that there's going to be more cuts coming, I firmly believe there probably will be. I don't know if it's going to be WWE main roster guys or it's going to be NXT developmental people. I'm kind of leaning toward NXT developmental people. This should not or worry any of you. And I've heard a lot of fans say, they're letting so many people go in NXT development. Well, do you know how many people they let go in, like, baseball, minor leagues and things after a while because they know they're not going to reach the majors and they're just like, yeah, we're cutting ties with you. You're just not it. NXT Developmental hires a ton of people, clearly knowing that out of the 100 people we just hired, we'll be lucky if 5 make it. Lucky. So they already know that they're going to cut 95% of them at some point. So that's nothing to even worry about. That's common. I don't even consider that massive firings. I just consider that that's the norm. That's what ends up happening. It's like auditioning for a play, folks. 100 people may show up, and there's 5 parts. But you don't say, well, 95% of the people got, you know, released. They didn't get released. They never got the part. They're trying out for a part. When you go to professional wrestling developmental, they're trying you out for a potential part. They may have you do a few matches here or there, or just train or work out, and they're keeping an eye on you. And they're evaluating you and saying, is there a potential? And if the general consensus is no, there's really not that much potential, there's no reason for them to keep you. They got to move on to other people who may. Don't worry about those releases. The releases to worry about are the main roster. The people I'm concerned about that I would keep my eye open about would be some guys who are being used in AEW right now. I don't know how they feel about people like, you know, our friend Angel Garza and Humberto. I don't know. Don't know. They've already got the Latino World Order, in fact, up there. I don't see them coming back to the main roster and making any big moves. I don't see them really even doing that much in NXT as in big moves. So I'd worry about them. There's probably a few women on the roster I would worry about. As far as the main roster, WWE is concerned, the only person, and I think he's already basically taking a different role, so I don't think he'll be fired, is Bobby Roode. I don't think Bobby Roode's going to wrestle anymore. I think he's already taken a different position, so I don't expect him to be released. I just don't expect you'll see him in a ring anymore. I would worry a little bit about guys like Tozawa. They're not using them at all. I mean, it's literally to the point now where Tozawa's the guy that the superstar passes in the hallway on his way to an interview or confronting someone else. He's not even featured in anything at all. So I'd worry a little bit about him. I heard that the remaining 2 members of Hit Row had a dark match, but I'd worry about both of them. I would worry a little bit about Tamina Snuka. I know because of her last name and everything, it's not likely, but at the same time, I didn't think Dolph Ziggler would be either. So those are the ones that come to mind, Mike, that I would keep an eye out.
I would also look out for Cedric Alexander, since his tag team partner is gone. You know, so I would look out for him. You know, I don't foresee them, unless they actually decide to do something with, you know, with what's her name if they bring her back. I'm talking about Emma. I don't foresee them bringing her back, so, you know, she might just go ahead and go someplace else and become Tennille Dashwood again, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I thought at one point, you know, if they would have kept Shelton Benjamin, I know they're doing something with with Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. But I thought you could have absolutely, if you kept Benjamin and Cedric Alexander and the other two guys, and possibly you put MVP, who may or may not be gone, I don't know, and what's his name with them. You could have had a super group, but obviously they didn't want to do that.
You know, my initial thought, especially after Friday and what happened on SmackDown, which we'll get to in the second hour, my initial thought was, if the Street Profits are not going to be Bobby Lashley's chosen people, and I think the WWE is having this confliction. They're realizing that the fans are cheering the Street Profits still, and they didn't want that. So now they're thinking, well, maybe we'll do this gimmick where the Street Profits can't cut it because they're just not cut out to be heels, which is dumb because they were heels originally. But anyway, they're just not cut out to be the type of heels, then this was the perfect opportunity to bring Benjamin and Alexander back as the Hurt Business. Perfect opportunity. So I'm a little surprised. I understand budget cuts and things, but I also understand this. There's a loyalty factor. This is extremely important. If you're a guy like Matt Riddle, yeah, you deserve to be cut loose, man. You didn't take your job seriously. You weren't whatever. You weren't really loyal to the company because you're out there causing pandemonium for the company. But when you're a guy like Matt Cardona, when you're a guy like Dolph Ziggler, and you have literally towed this company line forever, you put up with being on the top to the very bottom, I think you've earned a spot where they say, you know, you're the family now. You're not going anywhere. You're going to be WWE until you're old and gray, and we will find different positions for you, whether it's backstage, scouting, whatever it happens to be. You will always be a WWE person because you've shown that loyalty. And then that sends a message, doesn't it? That sends a message to guys in their mid-30s or early 30s who are thinking about jumping ship when their contract comes up, and they say, well, maybe I won't. Because the WWE has a track record of, if you stick with them, of taking care of you when you're really not wanting to wrestle so much anymore. So that's a positive. You take a look at a guy in his late 30s and say, maybe I'm going to have four more years. I sign one more five-year contract. And then how do I support my family from there? Well, the WWE has shown that if you stick with them, they make you pretty much a part of their family. They'll find a job for you. They'll make sure you're employed. Maybe not in the ring anymore because you're past your prime or whatever, but they'll make sure there's something there for you. That is so vital to a company. If you're loyal to a company, you should not be shown the door. And when you do show somebody the door like that, Todd, it makes everyone else feel like I could be next.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, if their time is up from in the ring, like getting older, and you still have a job at the WWE, if they keep you, they may put you in the office, be like an office worker or something in the WWE, like in the higher ups.
You at least have to make that offer, Mike, because that's what spurs greater loyalty. Again, if you're a 30-something year old wrestler and you're thinking to yourself, I got 5 or 6 more years left, do I want to sign a 5-year contract with the WWE and then maybe they're going to cut me and I have nothing, or do I want to go elsewhere and do something? The factor that may keep you there is how they treated the older workers when they got a little bit older and past their prime. And the WWE does not have a good track record with that.
They don't have a good track record with that. And look, I mean, I'll state another fact. Think about it this way. They still have Titus O'Neil on the roster. What does he
yes.
do? That Father of the Year, whatever thing that he won, is what, 3 years back, whatever, and he's still
yep.
here, and he doesn't wrestle. They don't use him in the ring. They don't do anything with him. Why is he still here?
Great point. I hesitate to tell you. The reason I think, I'll be honest, because, I mean, that's the reason we do the show, right, is to be up front. I'll be honest with you. I think Titus O'Neil is there because they find him to be the perfect ambassador to minorities. They realize if they fire him, he's a goodwill ambassador for the WWE, does a lot of charity work, he does talks in a lot of schools, he does a lot of the motivational stuff, and I think they think, well, if we let him go, we've let go a real bridge to the minority community. So I think it's a little bit of patronizing, to be honest with you. I really do. Because I got news for you. I love Titus O'Neil. Always have loved Titus O'Neil. I think he's one of the most underrated, especially on the microphone, one of the most underrated performers we have. But you're right, he's doing nothing. So why in the world would you ever consider letting somebody like Elias go and keeping Titus? Why would you ever consider letting a guy go like Shelton Benjamin and keeping Titus? That doesn't make any sense at all. So that's my problem. The WWE has this weird track record of just being very eclectic with who they choose. And I can understand, okay, maybe Shelton Benjamin, who's been in WWE for about 20 years on and off, maybe he's not he should be a trainer. But maybe he's not really a lifer because he left and came back and he left and came back. Dolph Ziggler, been there through the thick and the thin. There is absolutely zero reason other than, again, I don't know. Maybe Dolph Ziggler asked for his release. I know he wants to go maybe wrestle with his brother. So if Dolph Ziggler, forget everything I'm about to say, if Dolph Ziggler said, I'd like to have my release. But if Dolph Ziggler did not say that, you couldn't get me to fire Dolph Ziggler. You could not get me to. Because that's way too much loyalty. That's way, way too much water under the bridge. And it sends such a horrible message to people. Why should I be loyal to the WWE when I pass my, certain point and I might not be as useful to them? They're just going to cut me. So why should I be loyal now in my 30s? Why should I be loyal now in my late 20s? The answer is there's no reason. This is the problem. This is the problem. So if you're a guy right now up and coming in the WWE, whether it be, I don't know, Dominic Mysterio or Austin Theory or any of the young guys that's coming up, think about it. Why be loyal to a company that would fire a guy like Dolph Ziggler or Matt Cardona? I don't have the answer to that question. It's just a horrible message to send. WWE really needs to reconsider doing this because they've done it now a few times. Curt Hawkins, too. Same thing. Certain people just should not be let go unless they request it. Now, I've heard, well, you know, Ali was let go because he was doing this political thing. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a heartbeat. The thing about Ali, he didn't endear himself because every single thing that went wrong, he took to social media to say, I didn't deserve this and I didn't deserve that. People don't like that. Did you ever hear Dolph Ziggler take to social media and say, I deserve to be in the title picture? And I'm like, no, you never did. Dolph Ziggler was a guy who got one of the biggest pops in WWE history, if I remember correctly, and then became literally the guy who admittedly said, I'm so good at selling other people that I'm just the guy that builds up other guys now. I'm just the guy that, oh, this guy's got to get through Dolph Ziggler, and then he's kind of gotten through somebody on his way to the top. I'm not going anywhere. He knew he wasn't going anywhere. And he's still a really, really, really good wrestler, finely tuned athlete. He's another AJ Styles. He'd probably do this for another 5-6 years. So my hope is that he actually requested his release. But, Mike, you know, guys like that, they really should be lifers in WWE.
Right, and think about this. What was one of the more popular things that was going on, you know, recently? That was this whole maximum male models thing. And Mansoor, actually, they found something for him to do, and he did it, and he did it really well, along with Mace or whatever. And those two guys should never have been fired. I guess, you know, so that, I mean, these are guys that, what's going to happen in 10 years when mommy is 36 years old, you know,
right.
And maybe wants to have a baby or two or whatever. I mean, hell, who knows? I mean, Charlotte Flair is 37 years old, right? It's getting almost past time to where she may or may not want to have a baby. If she decides to go off and have a baby, what are they going to do, cut her?
Well, I mean, she's going to have that protection of being Ric Flair's daughter. There's certain people like Rey Mysterio and people they're never going to do that to because they're just not. But a lot of people don't have that protection. Shelton Benjamin didn't have that protection. Dolph Ziggler don't have that protection. Matt Cardona didn't have that protection. So that's a problem. But, I mean, as far as Mace and Mansoor, you're saying, well, they said Vince McMahon didn't like the maximum male models gimmick. Okay. Well, then it's just as easy as a writer. And, oh, the writers can't think of anything for him. Well, let me think of something for you in 5 seconds. How about Mace and Mansoor confront Maxine backstage only as themselves, not as these sissy models who are posing, and say, hey, you told us that if we went along with this nonsense and humiliated ourselves, that we were going to get somewhere in a title picture, and then the next thing you know, you're hanging around Alpha Academy, and you've left us stranded. Who the hell do you think you are? Make them serious characters, then, and say, we're taking this shit off. And if that's your new boys, if you think that's your new boys, and you're just going to throw us over for them, you're crazy. We're going to prove to you that you picked the wrong team. Mace is a big dude. Big dude. Certainly looks as powerful as, almost as powerful as a guy like Otis. And Mansoor and Chad Gable could probably pull out some really good stuff. You would probably see some very, very, very good matches. And you could still have that drama there. Because the drama could be, later on, Mace could say, wait a minute, did you not say that this whole thing with Otis was just to trick them into, you know, thinking that we really thought Otis was one, a member of our team? What, you actually got feelings for this guy? I thought we had something. Well, then you got something, don't you? And then she could say, well, you know, things happen. You got a real-life drama in there somewhere. Get rid of the maximum male models. Don't get rid of the people who did it. Don't write a part and then say, oh, well, the part I wrote sucks, so the actor must suck. That's silly. Those guys were able to do some things. Let's see what they could have done against Alpha Academy if they sort of had that grudge against Maxine for making this idea in the first place. I mean, you got the built-in thing where you could say, you know, L.A. Knight was smart enough to get the hell out of this. He saw it coming. We should have been smart enough. But no, what do? You throw us over. And guess what, Alpha Academy? She's going to throw you over too, because that's who she is. She uses people. She used us. Now she's using you. At least it would be an interesting storyline, Mike.
At least. And look, and then there's branches on that tree to the fact of well, she's throwing you over, but she could say, well, no, I'm not, and
right.
prove it and say, well, you know, we could have that whole love affair thing like they did with Mandy Rose with Maxine and Otis. Because we know that Otis can carry something like that off. He's done it before.
Yes. Yes. At least something. You had the ability to use those guys. There's guys that you are not using at all. Not at all. And by the way, if you weren't going to use them on the main roster, if you really said, I don't see a thing in this world that we can do with Mansoor and Mace in the WWE, send them to NXT. That's two more names there that you could really use for the ratings. Shelton Benjamin. Can you imagine Shelton Benjamin going down to NXT for a little while? He could have helped train a lot of people and still been in the middle of some of the matches. And excellent opportunity. Dolph Ziggler, same way. Let them guys go down there. Those are names that you've established. And now you're going to let somebody else have them rather than NXT take them and use them for rating. That doesn't make any sense. You've established these names. You can't send Elias back? He was the drifter down there, right? You can't send Elias back there? Why? That's one more name. Hell, I know a lot of people, if they said, look, Dolph Ziggler's going to be there, Mansoor and Mace is going to be there, Shelton Benjamin's going down there, apparently Elias is going down there. I know a lot of people would say, I guess I'm going to have to start watching. There's a lot of familiar names now. This is going to be interesting to see how they interact with the guys who are already there. So then when you're watching for those guys, then you see the new guys that they want you to see, and you start to get interested in them as well. That's the way the game works. Instead, they just let them go. You should really not be making any main roster cuts. What you should be doing is saying we're going to take guys who aren't working out in NXT and releasing them and sending some names down from WWE who we don't have anything for up here. I know the argument's going to be, well, they're making big salaries. Okay, well, it's a guaranteed contract anyway. It's not like you're not paying him now. You're going to pay him now. You're going to pay him the rest of that contract. Whatever it happens to be, you're going to pay him. So you might as well be paying him to work rather than paying him to sit home. You may as well be paying him to maybe generate a few ratings rather than to pay him to sit home. Makes no sense. Absolutely no sense. Anyway, let's get on to a little bit of our SmackDown review, because a couple of weird things in there, wasn't there? I know the main one that everybody wanted to talk about was the Street Profits losing to the LWO. I saw this coming, actually. I saw this coming because I couldn't possibly see a scenario by which Ray and Santos lost when they're going to have that match next week, unless it was an accidental, Santos accidentally hits Ray or something. I was looking for that. But when that didn't happen, I wasn't really all that surprised. This little faction, which I guess has no name, I didn't hear him say anything, just Lashley's whatever, they were getting cheered when they wanted them to be booed. And I think they're starting to come to the realization that it's going to be very tough. We got to do one of two things. We got to totally destroy the Street Profits' popularity, or we got to make it appear as though the Street Profits, try as they might, can't turn their back on their own morals and their fans. One of the two. I don't know which one they're going to go for. If they go for the latter, then Bobby Lashley's going to get a different team together, quite obviously, and that'll be the Street Profits against Lashley and his team. If it's the former, then you're going to see the Street Profits progressively do worse and worse things, with the gimmick being we have to be cutthroat, we have to be bloodthirsty, or Bobby Lashley's going to cut us loose. I don't like that angle, and I'll tell you why I don't like that angle, because it still puts the sympathy on the bad guy. The sympathy on, well, the Street Profits really don't want to do it, but they don't really see any other way of success, so they're reluctantly doing things the way Bobby Lashley wants them to do it, but secretly they wish they didn't have to. That's not a good recipe for a heel team. So I hope it's the latter. I hope it's that they finally say, you know, take your suit and tie, take your whatever and shove it where the sun don't shine, We're going back to being who we were. We were successful then, too. And then have Lashley say, you know, nobody throws me over, and then goes and gets a team that I guess is going to go against the Street Profits. Todd, were you surprised to see the Street Profits drop that match?
Absolutely not. Like you said, it was when they came out with Bobby Lashley, when they first came out with Bobby Lashley, they were cheering them. Not just the Street Profits, Lashley too. And this is not working for all three of them, technically. And it's not.
I mean, could it work for them? Yeah, it could. But I don't know. It seems to me that it was ill thought out to begin with. Seems to me that the WWE didn't quite have this worked out the way they thought. They thought the Street Profits were going to come out with Bobby Lashley and everybody was going to boom out of the arena. And it didn't happen. So that kind of, I think, maybe set them back on their heels a little bit, Mike, and they're not sure where to go with it.
Right, and now that they fired Benjamin and possibly Cedric Alexander, then there's your, I mean, I know there are other people that they could do this with, that they could bring up from NXT or whatever, but the names were there to have them reunite, right? It was there.
Yeah.
It was there for them.
It was there.
And by doing what they did, I mean, look, by doing what they did, by firing Alexander and possibly firing, what's his name, Benjamin, and possibly Alexander, they can't do it now. Now, can they find, like I said, can they find somebody else? Yeah. And, look, people, you know what people wanted before all this stuff started to happen? They wanted those three plus MVP to get back together. That's what everybody wanted.
Of course they did. And, Mike, listen. The angle writes itself. You have Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. You can get in the Street Profits face and say, if you think you're ever going to be what we were, you're just a substitute for us. That's it. That's all you are. It's Bobby Lashley's substitute for us, and you're not even a good substitute. And then Lashley could say, hey, what are you doing? You know, these are my boys, and you're coming in here and interfering. Yeah, we used to be something. We're not something now. You guys got cut loose. And you can't deal with it, then you could have it back and forth that they're saying, well, you know, there's this competition. Who's going to be Bobby Lashley's chosen team? Would Lashley, you know, you let Sheldon and Cedric go out and beat a team or two. So they could say, hey, Bobby Lashley, you watching that? How's your Street Profits doing? How are they doing? So you're not really sure what's going to happen. Is Lashley going to side with the Street Profits and stick with them? Is he going to side with Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin, the original Hurt Business, what's he going to do with them? Then you get to the point where they say, Bobby Lashley says, look, if this is what you want to try to really impress me, see if you can beat the Street Profits. I bet you can't. I bet you can't, because when the pressure's on, you guys always fold. That's why I cut you loose to begin with, is when the pressure's really on you, you fold. So next week, you fight the Street Profits. Show me what you got. Show the Street Profits what you got. And then he tells the Street Profits, this is your moment. This is the moment I was telling you. You got to be bloodthirsty. You got to be ruthless. Don't embarrass me next week. You go out there and you destroy these guys. You hear me? And then when it looks like the Street Profits are going to do exactly that, have Lashley jump them. Get back with the Hurt Business and say, you know, these guys were right to begin with. You guys are losers. You always will be losers. You're always going to come out with your little red solo cups, and the fans are always going to tip their hat to you, and you're always going to do your little dance, and you go right ahead and do that while we win title. You got a bitter feud. You got a great feud. Hell of a lot better than releasing Cedric Alexander to do absolutely nothing and still pay his contract, Mike.
Absolutely, and think about this. As this is going on, you could absolutely have Bianca Belair figure into this somehow, and hey, possibly even take the side of Alexander and Benjamin, and that's a branch on a tree.
Or the exact opposite. Have her come out and say, what is this? This is not who you guys are supposed to be. This isn't what you're about. If you think you need this to be successful, and that could be the reason Bobby Lashley says, well, as soon as Bianca got in your ear, I knew you guys weren't going to go anywhere with me. So that's why I did it. Put MVP back in the mix with it. If you want to fire anybody, I hate to say it, but if you're going to let anybody go, let Almost go. What are you doing with Almost? Do you see a future for Almost anywhere? What's the future for Almost? What's he going to do? Tell me. You got a big title picture planned with him? You got a big feud planned for him? You got nothing. You got absolutely nothing for Almost. So why don't you just keep Shelton Benjamin? Put him back together with Cedric Alexander. Get that feud going with the Street Profits and the like, and cut Almost loose. Almost isn't going anywhere, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Almost, they never really used him anyway in the beginning, except for that Raw Underground thing he did a couple years back, and that's it. And after that, it was like, nope, we're not gonna use him anymore.
Well, they used him very poorly. He never should have been a guy who's in the ring very much at all anyway. Should have been like an Andre the Giant. He comes down once in a blue moon. Most people lose to him because he's huge. He doesn't wrestle that much. He doesn't go for titles. He doesn't have major feuds. It's just an attraction once in a while. That's what it should have been. The bodyguard who occasionally wrestles. Nah, they couldn't do that with him. So they blew it. He's already lost to Bobby Lashley. He's already lost to other people. And the mystique is gone. There's nothing left. I don't know what you're going to do with him. Nothing, really. Now, here's another gripe I have with SmackDown. Not only did you put Asuka and Io Sky on SmackDown rather than put it in Fastlane where it should be, but you didn't even make it the main event. You got to be kidding me. There was no reason on earth why this shouldn't have been the main event. And by the way, it wasn't even a great match, and the reason it wasn't a great match, it was not given the time to be a great match. These are two people who know themselves, each other, inside out, backwards and forwards. They could have put on a five-star match and never broke a sweat if you gave them the opportunity to do it. You did not give them the opportunity to do it. Instead, you gave them a chintzy ripoff ending that involves a supposed seasoned pro in Asuka being distracted by something that really didn't have anything to do with her. Makes no sense. Undermines Asuka, it undermines Io Sky as a champion, it undermines their skills. I do not for the life of me understand why in one breath you say, we want to have the women have main events occasionally too to prove that they're just as good as the men. And then when you have a legitimate main event match, you don't make it the main event. You make Raquel Rodriguez and Rhea Ripley a main event. When everybody under the sun knows that there's not a chance in hell that Raquel Rodriguez is winning, but you won't make Asuka and Io Sky a main event? That's a main event anywhere. I'm really disappointed with the way they handled this, Mike. That if that doesn't deserve a main event, then I don't know. I don't know what women's match does.
Right, and furthermore, what was the use of having Charlotte out there?
All she did
was sit at ringside. You know, I mean, if the rumors were true, right? If the rumors were true, and Kairi Sane is being signed or is going to be signed, this would have been a perfect place to have her out there. Yeah, have that great match, right? But also have the whole thing with, Charlotte can be out there, but you still have a third person in damage control. That's Bayley, and
Dakota,
you know,
Kai,
and out
Bayley
there. So I mean, 2-3, 3-2, and then all of a sudden out of the crowd, here comes Kairi Sane, and there you go, you know?
See, the thing I guess they want to try to do some kind of a four-way dance for that belt. That's where they're heading with this. Asuka's going to say she was ripped, going to want to get in it. And there's going to be a four-way for this title, but you've missed the point. The main event is, in fact, Asuka versus Io Sky. You could have built this up for weeks and weeks. Tell Asuka, you know you have this new character now where you're kind of just supposed to be like a crazy person and all this weird paint that just says nobody's ready for Asuka, but break character for once. Break that character. And same way with Io Sky, we know you're supposed to be damage controls champion and you're a bad guy, but break character for a minute. And literally just say, look, there's nobody in the world I have more respect for. She's been my tag team partner for I don't know how long. We've traveled together, wrestled together, laughed, cried together, whatever. But time we found out who the best person is. You would have had a match that everyone would be interested in. Every single person would be interested in. And the payoff, of course, or should be the payoff, is that when, I guess, Io Sky, you want her to win. Okay, so Io Sky wins, and she wins clean. And then when Asuka and Io Sky sort of embrace each other and you know, they're perfectly fine with the match, then have Damage Control hit the ring and start beating up Asuka and have Io Sky flip. And then you've got Bayley, Kai, against Asuka and Io Sky as a potential match. Then of course you'd lead to Bayley Io Sky for the championship, which is the leader of Damage Control versus the one she's always supposed to have been jealous about. You got the story that writes itself. They didn't do it. Sad. Todd, that's a main event match, and that has to be treated like a main event match.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that should have been a main event match, not on TV. That should have been a pay-per-view quality match.
It really should have been, and it could have been. But unfortunately, they didn't give enough time. Anyway, the Bloodline storyline is running out of gas quicker than, a Hummer in a desert. I don't understand. You went from Jimmy Uso saying, I don't want you to be like Roman Reigns, to his brother, to Jimmy Uso being exactly like Roman Reigns. From Jimmy Uso saying, I need to get my brother Jay out of this, to I'm back in it, balls deep. It makes no sense. It is a senseless, completely senseless turn of events. Completely illogical and completely senseless. Now, AJ Styles was, this is the unfortunate thing. AJ Styles was never meant to be John Cena's tag team partner. WWE has blown this, and I'll tell you how they've blown it. AJ Styles was supposed to be taken out, so John Cena has to have a mystery partner come down and make the save when the Bloodline is beating the hell out of him, and that person was not The Rock. Everybody thought it was The Rock because you had them on the same show embracing and him saying welcome back, and they put their little differences aside. And everybody's like, oh, this will be great because The Rock won't have to do all the work and neither will Cena since they're older. It's a tag team match. So everybody's chanting for The Rock. It wasn't ever supposed to be The Rock. It was supposed to be LA Knight. LA Knight was supposed to come down there and make that save Friday night. He couldn't because he tested positive for COVID. So he was told to go home. Now, from what I'm hearing, you don't feel bad or whatever, but he still tested positive for COVID, so he had to go home. This was supposed to be his big moment, his run in to save John Cena, clear the ring of the Bloodline, and become John Cena's partner for Fastlane. Instead, the fans are chanting "Rock, Rocky, Rocky, Rocky," because they're totally convinced that it was supposed to be The Rock, based upon what the WWE did a few weeks back. You're mishandling LA Knight already. This is a major mistake, Mike, and I hope if they try to correct this next week or whenever LA Knight can come back, that the fans will accept it.
I hope so, too, but judging on their past efforts to do this type of correction, not so sure. You know, and that's a waste of heat. You know, I mean, this LA Knight is getting great reactions. I mean, as good. He's getting almost as good a reaction as a face that Dominic is getting as a heel. And we know what Dominic is doing as a heel. You know, that is, I mean, when they decided to turn Dominic heel, that was the smartest move they ever made.
Well, the stupidest move they've made in a long time is to go through the ending to this match. What I would have done is I would have had the hold put on that contract signing. I would have basically had Paul Heyman say, well, I guess there's not going to be a match based on what happened to AJ Styles. And then at least you could have had Adam Pearce say, well, we don't know that. We don't know what Styles is in, so we'll just wait till next week, and we'll figure it out. Next week, front and center, we'll see. Then at least if LA Knight in a week or 10 days or even if it's 2 weeks, whatever you have to stall, still keep that moment because that moment is important. Now that moment is gone, and it will not be able to be brought back in the same manner. It's actually going to be anticlimactic now because the fans already know. It's already hit the internet. It was supposed to be LA Knight. So now they know. You're never going to get that moment back. You should have never done it. You know what you should have done? You should have said, we're canceling that segment, and we're giving Asuka and Io Sky 10 more minutes. And making them the main event like they should have been to begin with. This is what happens when you don't adequately plan things. So here we go. If LA Knight does not get the reaction they hope when he runs out, it's your fault. It's your fault because you let it leak out when you could have canceled that segment. I would have canceled that segment and said, oh, no, it's too important. That LA Knight run out there, and you know, if he can't make it because of the COVID thing, then we'll wait. But this has got to be. We can't have this happen again with John Cena. I guess you're going to get John Cena in the ring a couple of weeks from now, and they're going to attack him again. And this time, LA Knight's going to run out, and people are going to say, "I wish it was The Rock," or people are going to say, "I knew that was coming. You had your moment last week." If you can't do it, don't have it at all. Now, as far as Pretty Deadly is concerned, you know, their gimmick is funny. I see where they're going with Pretty Deadly as a tag team. It's mostly going to be comedy. I guess it's all right. I don't see them being top guys. I just don't. I think they're going the way of the comedy wrestlers. I guess that's okay if they want to be entertaining. It's certainly not going to get them any championships, in my opinion. Unless they drastically change them once they get back in the ring, but I don't see that being overly likely either. As far as the Brawling Brutes, well, they're pretty helpless without Sheamus. I'm a little bit saddened by this. I don't see Grayson Waller and All Theory as a permanent tag team, Mike. Maybe they will be. But if they're not a permanent tag team, why let them get a win over a permanent tag team when Grayson Waller's not really even doing anything other than his talk show? You want to protect Theory and not have him lose. I get it, but why Waller?
You got me there, you know. And I just want to go back to your whole scenario with AJ Styles. Okay, let's lay that thing out. That happens with AJ Styles on Friday, on 2 days ago, right?
Yep.
Well, next week, what you can have happen is the rest of the OC come out and say, look, we haven't been getting along with AJ Styles, but we're still amicable enough about him that we understand and, you know, have them say, look, we tried to warn him and all that stuff and, all that stuff. So, you know, there's a branch on that tree that if they would have just allowed the AJ Styles not to play out different, the AJ Styles thing to play out differently, you could have multiple branches on that tree, including the OC branch.
Well, you could take it one step farther. You could have the OC come out and say, you know what, AJ Styles was right. We should have been there for him. We weren't. We become complacent or whatever. We were the ones who said, stay out of bloodline business, but AJ Styles is right, so we're putting ourselves in bloodline business. You took our leader out. We want Solo Sikoa, and we want Jimmy Uso in this ring tonight. There you go. You got a tag team match now and a good one, right? So, of course, the Bloodline's going to win. Of course they are. They could continue to beat the hell out of one of the members of the OC, whichever one it happens to be, and have John Cena come down and make the save. Then maybe next week you could have John Cena say, I want solo one-on-one. Then when Jimmy Uso jumps in and you get that whole beat down again, that's when LA Knight makes his return. He should be fine in a couple of weeks. However many weeks it takes, you can stall. That's my point. If you're a good writer, you say, well, there are different branches on the tree. We can slow this down a little so that LA Knight still gets his moment, because it's important that that moment happens. Nope, they just went through with it anyway. Now, afterwards, I'm hearing John Cena took on one of the Street Profits. I believe it was, it wasn't Montez Ford, it was the other guy. And obviously John Cena won. I don't see what good that does. I don't know. All I do know is this. If you're going to make a special moment that's going to really get a wrestler completely over, you had it. You had it. If LA Knight didn't have that COVID problem, you had that moment. That crowd would have went nuts. But you knew you didn't have it. So when you know you don't have it, why did you go through with it to begin with instead of saying, we're just going to put a hold on this? We have a story with AJ Styles. We have a story with, I know, I think Gallows had to have his knee scoped out. That's why it wasn't there. So maybe he wouldn't be available next week. But I'm like, could he walk down to the ring at least? He doesn't even have to get in the ring. They could back jump him backstage and leave him lying. That could be part of it. So then it's Carl Anderson one-on-one against maybe Solo, and then Jimmy jumps in on top of that, and then John Cena makes the save. There's so many things you can do. There's always a way out of it. But never squander that moment. Never squander the big moment, because you're not going to get the big moment back. And that's the big moment. So I think that was a huge mistake on the WWE's part. You got to be able to call an audible. Now, as far as the Jimmy Uso thing is concerned, I don't know where the writers are going with this, but I know this. Unless this is all some kind of a huge bluff, unless we're getting some kind of really deep storyline in which Jimmy and Jay got their heads together and said, we are going to totally bluff out the rest of the Bloodline and Paul Heyman into thinking we're enemies, we're going to divide and conquer, one's going to Raw, one's going to SmackDown, we're going to totally take out the Bloodline psychologically and physically eventually. That works. Other than that, there is no logical reason for Jimmy Uso to suddenly be the heel that he is after basically telling his brother the only reason. I wanted you out. Why would he want his brother out of the Bloodline when it would just strengthen them? If Jimmy Uso agrees with everything the Bloodline's doing, why would you want your brother out when having your brother in would just strengthen the group? Makes no sense. And then if you're so moral, you don't want your brother to turn into Roman Reigns, then why are you? That makes no sense. None of that storyline makes any sense anymore. Now, the best part of the Bloodline storyline was it always made sense. That's why it was so good. The things that were happening, you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's good. Not everyone feels the same way. Everyone has a different perspective. The perspectives they have are logical. Jimmy Uso's perspective is not logical. Solo's perspective is not logical. One minute he's listening to Paul Heyman, the other minute he doesn't want to. One minute he looks like he's going to hit Jimmy, the next minute he's protecting Jimmy. We have no clue what's going on because it's not logical. You've lost the logic in the Bloodline storyline, and that's a shame because it's the best one you've had in a long, long, long time. Long time. So we'll see where that goes. Mike, again, what would, other than Jimmy and Jay getting together and sort of trying to bluff the Bloodline into thinking they're enemies in order to somehow divide and conquer, how does the Jimmy Uso change to a heel so quickly make any sense at all?
I don't know, but it's just like other things that have not made sense, you know? I mean, how many times have we seen somebody go from heel to face or face to heel within a week. I mean, it's been for how many years has it almost been the modus operandi of, well, I mean, it's almost like you're trying to give the fans whiplash, you know?
Thing you cannot do, in my opinion anyway, if you're a wrestling writer, is you cannot be totally illogical with fans. I don't care what you're writing for, whether it's wrestling, whether it's a TV show, whether it's a movie, whatever. The minute it becomes illogical or characters do things that are not logical to their character, that's when you lose your audience. You know, think back to old sitcoms. You always knew in The Honeymooners how Ralph Cramden was going to react to something. So you'd wait for it. You'd say, oh, wait till he finds out about this. He's going to do this, and you knew. You always knew how, Norton would react. You always knew how Alice would react. You always knew those things. If they reacted totally differently, if instead of saying, oh, one of these days, bang, zoom, to the moon, if he literally hit her, you'd be like, well, that's the end of this. I don't want to watch this anymore. This is dumb. He never would do that. You already knew that he was always threatening but never would. You can't do things that are illogical to a character and then expect the character to be endeared to the audience. Married with Children, if Al Bundy suddenly became, super rich and there was none of that shoe salesman, struggle to survive thing, it wouldn't have been Al Bundy. It wouldn't work. You can't have illogical things happen. You got to understand the character and what the character would do, and there's no reason for Jimmy Uso to be doing this. Jimmy Uso's logical reaction to what happened to him when his brother super kicked him would be, I deserved it. I understand why he did it. I told him to do it. But he don't understand that I was only looking out for him. Then, if you had Paul Heyman say, how is it that you look out for Jay, but you don't look out for Solo? Solo's your brother, too. And I got news. You're not sitting here saying Solo shouldn't be like this. Solo shouldn't do that. I think you're being disingenuous. I think you're favoring Jay. Why don't you just let go Jay be Jay? And you worry more about Solo. Then if he said, maybe you're right. Maybe I do need to talk to Solo. And he's talking to Solo saying, we really don't need this. We could go out as a group ourselves. We don't need Roman. We don't need Paul Heyman. That would make sense. Was Solo sticking up for his brother because is he sticking up for him because he's his brother? Or is he sticking up for him because he's part of the bloodline and that's what Roman wants? Well, we don't really know, do we? And neither does Paul Heyman, who's suspicious about Jimmy, but realizing, well, Jimmy's helping the team, but is he helping the team because he's on Roman's side or he's looking out for Solo? That makes sense. This does not make sense. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. So this is why it's falling apart. Much like the Judgment Day thing makes no sense. All of a sudden, the Money in the Bank briefcase means absolutely nothing. You don't see Damian Priest coming down to try to cash it in on anybody. You don't really see him mentioning it very much. All of a sudden, Jamie McDonough's nowhere to be found. They're claiming they don't need a new member in the Judgment Day, and yet they're actively recruiting two, maybe three. Makes no sense. Your logic is no longer there. As a writer, when your logic is no longer there, we don't like your characters because we can't predict how they will react. Why do you think Stone Cold Steve Austin was so popular? You knew exactly how he was going to react. So when you had some guy down there saying, I don't give one damn about Stone Cold Steve Austin, and if he was in this ring right now, I'd tell him right to his face, and you hear the music hit, you're like, uh-oh, this is not going to end well. Here we go, right? You already knew it. You already knew it. That's what made it so good. You already knew that if you heard the Undertaker's gong, the guy in the ring was going to be like, oh, shit, not him. You already knew it. Part of good writing is that your character is so strong. You've, as a writer, made a character so strong that the audience can already prejudge what their reaction might be. old I Love Lucy episode, Jody's new one, Ricky finds out about this, oh, you know what's going to happen, right? That was the payoff. The audience could anticipate. We can't anticipate if it's illogical. If tomorrow, all of a sudden, Rhea Ripley says, oh, well, I'm in love with Damien Priest, that's illogical. You've shown nothing of that. You've already kind of indicated you're with Dominic. It makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense. So we wouldn't accept it because it doesn't make sense. If you did it over the course of a month or two, it might make sense, but not immediately. Well, that's the same thing with Jimmy. You did it over, literally, he gets super kicked by his brother after saying, go ahead and super kick me, I deserve it. And then all of a sudden, he changes his whole attitude. He's 100% on the bloodline side now, and he's a bad guy. For what reason? Where's the rationale behind that? There isn't any. There isn't any. Now let's forward to Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens' rationale is perfectly correct. He shouldn't trust Jey Uso. He should not trust Jey Uso, and he doesn't trust Jey Uso. That's logical. That's where the difference is, Mike.
That's actually, you're right. That is very logical. And furthermore, here's the deal. The let's go back a couple of decades and look at what happened with Sting. All right. That whole Crow gimmick was a reaction to what? The NWO, right? That's what that was. That was a reaction to the NWO. And once we saw after a while, after he fell down from the ceiling, do what he did, and go back up again, we knew how he was going to react, that character was going to react every time it came to the NWO. We knew the reaction. So that's how come that character got so popular. I give you another example. There was a two-part Roseanne episode that hints on the fact that her sister was getting beat up by her girlfriend, her boyfriend, I mean, right? So in the second part of the at the end of the first part of the episode, Dan finds out, and the logical reaction that Dan has when he finds out is, he goes out and beats the crap out of, now, it's an assault, don't get me wrong, but he goes out, but the reaction is, he goes out, because he loves Roseanne's sister, he goes out and beats the crap out of the guy who was beating her sister, right? It's an assault, but that's a logical reaction in some people's minds, right? So
logical reactions are the most important element to any story. To any story. That's why there are characters who are endearing throughout wrestling history, because you already knew what their reactions was going to be. That's why there are characters in novels and movies that were endearing, because you already knew what their reaction was going to be. You already have a preconceived concept of, okay, wait till so-and-so hears about this or finds out about this or whatever. Wrestling breaks that a lot. Just breaks it a lot. I mean, let's even break down a little bit with the Street Profits. The Street Profits were way too easily convinced to go with Bobby Lashley. You should have done a much longer story where Bobby Lashley said, you know, I think you guys got what it takes, but you guys need to change your attitude a little bit. And they could have said, hey, listen, no offense to you, Bobby, but we don't need to change our attitude. We've just been having a little bit of rotten luck. We love coming out there and performing for the fans. They love us. We don't need to take shortcuts. We don't need to do – you don't need to be our MVP, okay? You got away from MVP. Now you're trying to be our MVP. Just let us do our thing. And then little by little, as they keep getting screwed, and Bobby Lashley says, what did I tell you? What am I telling you? They reluctantly say, you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe it is time for a change. Then it makes sense. Then it makes sense. It doesn't make sense for them to say, oh, we're good guys and fan favorites, and Bobby Lashley says, how would you like to turn heel and be with me? Okay. That doesn't make any sense. Based on what? A 5-minute talk? then how moralistic was he to begin with? See, this is the thing. The WWE doesn't want to tell that story slow. And I'll just get to it already. Just get to it. By the way, I was reminded a couple of more people that might be on the chopping block is Jinder Mahal and both of those guys from Indiris, whatever the hell that is. We haven't seen them in forever. I don't see them going anywhere. You might be right. You might be, I mean, they still do have shows in India and things. They might want to keep at least Jinder, but I don't see those other two guys lasting very much. Anyway. I did want to talk about the big SmackDown move because SmackDown in 2024 is coming back to USA Network. And I know that's a little bit of old news, but here's some news you might not have heard. It is probably going to be 3 hours. USA Network does not want to lose an hour of programming. Lose an hour of programming because they're probably losing Raw. Contingent. They're still in the midst of possibly getting Raw and SmackDown. They could potentially end up with all the WWE programming. They could end up with Raw, SmackDown, and NXT all being on the USA Network. But what I'm hearing is if they don't, and it's likely they won't because that's a lot of money, if they don't, they still want 3 hours, which is fair if they're going to give all that money, which means SmackDown is then going to go to 3 hours. So then you're going to get 2 3-hour shows a week. This is an awful lot of wrestling. Because wherever Raw ends up, you already know that's going to be 3 hours. They're not going to take an hour away from it. So that's an interesting thing, Todd. You may end up now with 2 3-hour shows, both Raw and SmackDown.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, when the first time when SmackDown went to the USA Network was on the Tuesday night, and it was Raw and Monday was Raw, and Tuesday they had SmackDown the first time. Then after a while, they went back, went to Fox. Now they're going back to the USA Network, added another hour of SmackDown, like maybe on a Friday night for 3 hours.
Well, that's another thing. They may change the date. They may actually change it. It may not be a Friday SmackDown on USA. It could potentially be Wednesday. Could be, I don't think they'll do it a Saturday, but it could be a Wednesday, and you know what that means, right? And then they could switch NXT to a different night. It depends on where they end up. Now, from what I'm hearing, it's a very long shot that USA would get all three. Very long shot. But if they do get that, Mike, well, then probably SmackDown will stay 2 hours. Raw will stay 3 and on Monday night, but there is no guarantee that SmackDown will be a Friday show.
There is no guarantee. And if the plan is to go to 3 hours, and I know my Fox network has a 9 o'clock, well, it'd be a 10 o'clock Eastern if newscast, if it was there, if it was in your time zone, but it's 9 p.m. Central Time here, newscast, and it goes for an hour. So they're not going to get that. If they do want to go 3 hours, they're not going to get that third hour from Fox.
Right.
You know? So unless they make the deal and they say, okay, we're going to go to FX or something like that. You know?
Yeah, I'm hearing Fox may be out of this deal. I'm hearing Fox may be washing their hands of it. I've been hearing a couple of different sources say there could be a couple of different places that they may end up live. But Fox, I see no reason for Fox to get rid of SmackDown just to get Raw. If Fox is letting SmackDown go, then they probably don't want Raw or NXT either. So I think they're shopping it around. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. Because I doubt they'll cut Raw down. So that means the USA Network, if they don't get Raw, will probably move SmackDown to 3 hours. Because they're going to want all 3 hours. And that means Raw will be on a different station for 3 hours. If they do end up with all the shows, then SmackDown will probably stay 2 hours. But I bet you it's not on Friday. This could be bad news for AEW because if they're going to go head-to-head like this, I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see. Starting to see a reversal of fortune somewhat. I've noticed that the shine is off the rose when it comes to AEW. A lot of fans are getting angry. A lot of fans are starting to turn a little bit on AEW and say the same things we've been saying for a while, that it seems like it's poorly run. The storylines are starting to lag a bit. Some of the wrestlers seem to be a little whatever. You've bought yourself way too many people that you can't promote. This is an issue. This is definitely an issue. There's an awful lot of wrestling currently on. If you're going to add one more hour to WWE programming, that's a lot. That's a lot. So some of the front runners I know, they were talking about maybe Disney. They were talking about even Peacock possibly getting it for live show. There's a lot of different talk. A lot of different talk. Now, do I think USA could afford all the shows? I don't know. See, the good thing about that, if USA does that, is they are locked in then. They're the WWE's network, right? You won't see anything else. And we know NBC is already getting some primetime specials that they're going to run. Almost like Saturday Night Main Event, I guess, type things. I think 4 a year or something is what they're saying on NBC. So it's possible that they may want to do this all in one network. If they do, that turns USA basically into the wrestling network, Mike. And, I mean, it may be a ratings boost for them, but at the same time, that's an awful lot of money to lay out.
It is an awful lot of money to lay out, but I can't remember. I don't know if Eversole's still there, but if they have somebody at NBC Universal that is willing, is saying, look, we've already got a possibility of 4 specials a year, you know, maybe a Saturday Night's Main Event or whatever, and then at this other network we're going to be paying for that. We're already paying for Raw. Why not give them at least what Fox was giving them, right? You never know.
Yeah. Well, that is true. I mean, you know, you got to spend money to make money. But $1 billion, which is pretty much what it's going to be, and then that's for one show, over the course of I don't know how many years, ooh, boy, I'll tell you. You're really betting on the WWE tremendously coming through with this Endeavor deal and becoming even more popular. And I'm not sure that's the case. There's a lot of people, Vince McMahon, I think himself and some other people said, well, we're hoping that most of the UFC fans become wrestling fans, and the wrestling fans become UFC fans. I wouldn't bank on that. I would not bank on that. I think a lot of UFC fighters are wrestling fans, and I think a lot of WWE wrestlers are UFC fans. But I'm not 100% sure a lot of UFC fans are WWE fans, and vice versa. I've heard from a lot of WWE fans who say, UFC, you know, some of the matches are only just a minute long. It's boring. I don't know a lot of the people, blah, blah, blah. I just like the pageantry and the fun of pro wrestling. Then you got the UFC guys saying, oh, that's fixed nonsense. If I want to watch a fixed fight and blah, 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 I don't want to see that guy pretending to fight. I want to see people fight. I think it's two different people. Yeah, of course, there's some cross selection, but I don't think it's a tremendous cross selection. I just don't, and I don't think you're going to make it that way either. So I'm not sure you're going to see tremendous increase in either. Not that, you know, 2 million, if you can draw 2 million, it's going to be hard now for a while with Raw, because Monday night, you know, up against Monday Night Football and stuff, it's going to be hard to draw 2 million now. But if you can, on a regular basis, start to draw around 2 million people, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of eyes on the product. That's a lot of advertising dollars, too. So it's feasible. People who offer ridiculous amounts. See, that's what I think is going to happen. I think Vince McMahon and company knows that. I think that there's going to be some services, whether they're pay services or their networks, that's going to offer ridiculous amounts of money. because TV in general is their ratings for all TV shows are dropping. People are watching less and less TV. There's just too much other selection. There's too many apps, too many other ways and things to do to tune into actual television show live. Simple as that. TV ratings are down for everything from sports to news to everything. They're just down. This could be a way to bring them back up, I guess. It just depends on the opportunity and how much money they really, really, really want to spend on it. If I were USA and I had the means, which I assume you do if you really want to, I'd make a bid at least. Because if you're the only network, Mike, where fans can see WWE wrestling, besides, of course, Peacock being the streaming service for their pay-per-views, you've got that whole audience locked up.
Yeah, you've got that whole audience locked up, and they better be careful, the WWE. NBC Universal got to be careful. I know they got a lot of money and all that stuff, but what happens if Disney gets involved? Disney has almost unlimited funds, right? So if Disney gets involved, all bets are off.
And from what I hear, Disney is involved. And you're right. Disney has crazy money. Whether they're willing to spend it or not, I don't know, but they have crazy money. They also have to understand, though, that that could isolate some of the audience, too, because there's going to be people who's not going to be able to tune in to see that. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to really wait and see where this goes, but I think it's very interesting that we're already hearing rumblings of SmackDown going to 3 hours, because that sort of indicates to me that USA is not getting Raw. Because if USA was getting Raw, they'd be perfectly satisfied with SmackDown staying at 2 hours. So there must be some other things on the table here. Now, I know some people are saying, well, maybe Fox will just switch over and get NXT and Raw. I don't think so. I don't think Fox got out of the WWE what they thought they were going to. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I think Nick Khan sold them a bill of goods. I really think Nick Khan was talking 3.5 million people weekly and just way off the charts. And they thought, we're going to integrate this with our sports programming. And remember, they started doing that. They started having, like, legit commentators talking about the wrestling and stuff, and then they just ended it. I think they were sold a bill of goods, and I think they know they were sold a bill of goods, and I think they just said, you know what, we're not – and they want more money now, by the way. They don't want less. Fox would keep them, probably, if they said, well, we'll sign the same deal or maybe we'll even take less. No. Now they're saying we want more. I think Fox has maybe reached a point where they're like, we're not paying anymore. Certainly not paying anymore. If anything, we pay less. So I think that arrangement's about to come to an end. Should be very interesting to see, though, where they end up, because you can't keep jumping around either. And you got to take in consideration services or networks are available to most fans. Because if you take your network or your programming from a network that reaches, I don't know, 20, 30 million people, and you get 2 million of them, and then you take it to a network that only reaches half of that, well, then you can only expect to get half of those ratings, right? So you got to be careful. You got to be careful where this ends up. I'm sure they're going to be. We're talking about primo businessmen who understand very clearly what they're doing, next-level businessmen. So whatever this happens to be, it'll probably be in the benefit of Endeavor and Vince McMahon and company, certainly. We'll have to wait and see. And we'll have to wait and see how this plays out for AEW, if they change the date of Raw, or SmackDown rather, to a different night, how that's going to play out. Could be some interesting times here in 2024 for professional wrestling. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.